Two.
The heart is a blue. Good morning. Welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. It is Monday. It is the 30th of April. It's very wet and windy out there. I hope you had a great weekend and you are looking forward to today's show. So on today's show, we are going to have a chat about HbA1c and how that relates to blood sugars and to type 2 diabetes and also type 1 diabetes. And we're also going to be chatting about fat and what fat is and the different types of fat and what's good and what's bad. And we also have on our show this morning a special guest. We have Sandra Lam from Body Mind Solutions. Hi, Sandra. So Sandra is a physiotherapist, and we're going to be talking more about what she does and her specialist field and how she might be able to help you. And we'll be talking to Sandra in about 15 minutes. So a quick disclaimer before we start the show as per normal. So the purpose of the Health Matters Radio Show is to provide competent information on the subject matters covered and to help educate, inform and enlighten you in ways that you can improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice, and the content in the show should not be treated as a substitute for medical advice. If you have any concerns about your health or require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 or speaking with your local pharmacist. All content is provided for general information only and is based on my knowledge, experience and opinion, and I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. So now we have that out the way, if you'd like to drop me a tweet, the show's Twitter feed is at Health Radio Show. So feel free to drop me a tweet to say hello or ask for a shout out. Or if you have anything you'd like me to announce, please send me a tweet. You can find the show's Facebook page. If you search Health Matters Radio Show on Facebook, you'll be able to find the show's page there. And as per normal, if you'd like to contact me directly, you can do so through my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And on today's show, we're going to play a few songs from 1987. So it's quite a difficult year to pick three good songs from, because there were so many good songs in 87. But I've got a few songs for you that we'll play as we go through the hour show this morning. So on to HbA1c. This has come up recently because a lot of my friends and obviously clients are diabetic, and the testing of HbA1c comes up a lot. Now, traditionally, when we're looking at testing for blood sugars, so for someone that's a diabetic to be able to manage their blood sugars, or someone that is an undiagnosed diabetic to pick up pre-diabetes, traditionally we've used blood glucose monitors, which give an instant blood sugar reading at that particular moment in time. But a while ago, a new type of technology came out, which was called HbA1c. And HbA1c measures the average blood sugar level over a period of 2 or 3 months. And I'm going to explain more about what it is and how it works. So the Hb in HbA1c refers to hemoglobin. So hemoglobin, as most people know, is part of the blood, and it is the oxygen-carrying pigment that gives blood its red colour, and it's the predominant protein in red blood cells. And about 92% of hemoglobin is hemoglobin A, and the A just stands for adult. So about 92% is hemoglobin A. The other 8% is made up of minor components, and these are A1C, A1B, A1, A1 and A1A2. And what we're looking at there is the A1C component of that 8%. So HbA1c relates to the glucose that binds to the hemoglobin, the protein in your blood. And the reason it's quite an interesting measurement of blood sugars, particularly if you're a diabetic or pre-diabetic or someone that is undiagnosed diabetic, is because it isn't affected by what you've eaten or what you've drunk in the 2 or 3 hours prior to the test. It attaches to blood, to red blood cells, and red blood cells generally last, or they have a lifespan of about 90 days. So it gives you an average, if you like. I mean, it's a bit like doing a journey. If you're traveling up to Scotland, for example, you know, and if you're on the motorway, you know, at some point you might be doing a bit more than 70 miles an hour, and at some point you'll be doing less than 70 miles an hour. But if you measured the average time it took to do that distance, you can come up with an average speed. So if you like, HbA1c is a measurement of the average speed or the average level of your blood sugars. So for people that are not diabetic, the normal range for HbA1c is around 6% or less. And if you have a measurement of more than 6%, then it is an indication of pre-diabetes or full-blown diabetes. Also, HbA1c for people that are diabetic is quite an interesting measurement of how well their medication or their dietary or their lifestyle interventions are working. Because if their medication is working and their dietary interventions are working, then over time, the HbA1c average should start to come down. So as I mentioned, HbA1c is not affected by what you've eaten or what you've drunk on that day, because it is the average over 60 to 90 days. So for people that don't want to fast, or, you know, fast, or what they've eaten or what they've drunk recently might actually affect their blood sugar levels, HbA1c is a much more accurate indicator of where the average has been over the last 60 to 90 days. So, to say, if your HbA1c is under 6, then that's great. If it's between 6 and 6.5, then that can be an indicator of pre-diabetes. And if it's actually 6.5% or greater, then that is generally considered to be an indicator of full-blown diabetes. So some of the symptoms that I've covered in previous shows of type 1 and type 2 diabetes, I'm going to go through these because it is quite important, because in the UK alone, there are about 4.5 million people with type 2 diabetes, and only about 3.7 million people know it. So there's anything up to about 750,000 people out there at the moment in the UK that have type 2 diabetes and don't yet know they've got type 2 diabetes. And type 2 diabetes is often only picked up when someone has a random blood test, so it's one of these well person checks, or they're being tested for something else and they just happen to measure blood glucose levels at the same time, or they start to get the symptoms of type 2 diabetes. And I'd argue that once you've got the symptoms, it's a lot more serious situation. And you can be a lot further down the line, because type 2 diabetes can take 10 years to manifest. And in those 10 years, it can cause huge amounts of problems for the body. So here's a few symptoms that you might be able to recognize either in yourself or others that you know. Doesn't mean necessarily if you can identify with one or two of them that you are a pre-diabetic. But you might be able to pick up one or two areas where maybe it's worth having a chat with your doctor about it. So here's some symptoms. So if you've got fatigue or you're constantly feeling tired, it could be a symptom of type 2 diabetes. If you have excessive thirst, if you have excessive urination, if you're hungry, if you have wounds that just take longer to heal than they used to, that can be an indicator. If you have infections, so particularly yeast infections are an indicator of the onset of type 2 diabetes, because when it's advanced, you actually start to urinate glucose, and the bacteria in the urinary tract live off of the increased levels of glucose in the urine. So if you have yeast infections, or they're quite frequent, that can be an indicator. If you have blurred vision, that can be an indicator as well, because the increase in blood glucose does affect the lens of the eye. And also, if you have an altered mental status, if you get easily agitated, or you have unexplained irritability, or your concentration levels are low, or you're easily confused more than normal, then that can be an indicator of type 2 diabetes or undiagnosed type 2. So again, I do stress that one or two of those is not a hard and fast rule that you might be a diabetic. But if you can identify with a few of those, it might be just worth getting those checked out with your GP just for peace of mind. So HbA1c is generally tested with type 2 diabetics and type 1 diabetics on a fairly regular basis. It's normally once every 3 or once every 6 months just to see how well their medications are doing. But it is frequently now being used for people that are not diabetic to indicate what the average is over the last 60 to 90 days. And more people are being picked up as type 2 diabetic through the HbA1c testing. So if you have a high level of HbA1c, so if you're above 6%, then your GP may decide to put you on medication. They may look at dietary modifications or lifestyle modifications, which is obviously something I deal with my clients. Or they may decide it will be a combination of those. And generally speaking, it's normally dietary change and lifestyle change at the very least. And sometimes, obviously, medication does come into it. So just to cover the main points here, HbA1c is a blood glucose test. It's not the same as the traditional blood glucose tests that test the glucose at that particular moment in time. And those are affected by what you've eaten and what you've drunk. HbA1c is an average over 90 days. But just remember, just because it's an average over 90 days doesn't mean that it's a be-all and end-all. If I go back to my motorway analogy, if you're doing a journey and sometimes you're doing 110 miles an hour and sometimes you're doing 40 miles an hour, but the average is 70, you can look at the average and go, well, that was fine. I was only doing 70 miles an hour. But it's when you're doing 110 miles an hour that you're more likely to get a speeding ticket. And in the same way, as HbA1c gives us an average over 90 days, it doesn't measure the individual spikes and troughs in blood sugars. And it is the individual spikes and troughs in blood sugars that can cause the serious damage in the body. So my opinion is HbA1c is great for measuring the average over 90 days, but individual sector or daily blood sugar testing, particularly if you are a type 2 diabetic and type 1 diabetic, is really important because it's those peaks and those troughs are going to cause you your health implications. So hopefully you found that interesting. I am on a mission at the moment to educate 100 million people about diabetes, type 2 diabetes, by the year 2030. So for those of you that are listening this morning, please do share or spread the word about the radio show and try to get me out there to more people and obviously educate people about what diabetes is, how to pick up the signs and how it can be dealt with or prevented. So, time for our first song before we go on to our guest interview. It's a song from 1987 and it's a classic by the Pet Shop Boys. Welcome back to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. On Monday, the 30th of April, 2018, we are going out live on Channel Radio 2. Just a quick reminder of the show's Twitter feed, which is at Health Radio Show. So you can tweet in between shows, ask me a question, ask for a shout out, and I'll give you a mention on air. You can also follow the show's Facebook page, which is the Health Matters Radio Show. So if you search Health Matters Radio Show, you'll be able to find the show's Facebook feed, Facebook page. And also, if you'd like to contact me directly regarding any content from the show today or any health related matters, particularly relating to weight management and or type 2 diabetes, you can drop me a line at www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And you can find all the previous shows on iTunes podcast. If you go to iTunes and search the Health Matters Radio Show, you can listen again to this show and all the previous 22 shows on iTunes. And they're also on my media page of my website as well. And it would be great if you could listen to some of those and give me some feedback. So on to our guest interview this morning. We have Sandra from Body Mind Solutions. Good morning, Sandra. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks.
It's great to have you on the show this morning.
It's good to be here.
So we're going to find out more about what Sandra does, how she got into doing what she does, and also how Sandra's services might be of use to you. We're going to go through some symptoms and things that you may be able to relate to that hopefully will make you make contact with Sandra and have a chat further. So Sandra, let's start at the beginning. What's your background?
Well, my background is physiotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a physio, interestingly, since 1987.
Yep.
So I've had over 30 years now being a physiotherapist. So I worked in the NHS for many years as a physio and as a senior manager as well.
Okay.
And then about 2006, I left to work into private practice. And following that, I became interested in persistent pain. And I've developed my program to be able to help people with persistent pain. So I've done this by developing my skills as a clinical hypnotherapist, a psychotherapist, and also a Pilates instructor as well. So I combine all of my skills as physio and as these as well to be able to help people with persistent pain.
And obviously there's a massive link between those three areas, isn't there? Between hypnotherapy, physiotherapy, and Pilates. So do you find that your clients tend to do one or the other, or is there a combination? Do they tend to go for the hypnotherapy and the physiotherapy as well, and then bring in the Pilates?
Well, certainly Pilates we tend to bring in at the end of our program.
Mm-hmm.
Once people have got moving and have resolved some of their pain issues. I do see some clients just for physiotherapy, but many times what I've discovered is that often there's other reasons why persistent pain is continuing. And that's really about what we explore. Often when we try to address persistent pain, we think it's just a physical aspect that's creating pain.
Mm-hmm.
But often it's because our body's alarm system has been set at high alert, which obviously when we're in pain, that will happen. But often we find when clients are, their alarm system's already on high alert, which they may not even be aware about, often the pain will continue.
Okay.
So we explore the different reasons why that might be and help people to address those triggers. And using the hypnotherapy and another technique called BWRT, Brain Working Recursive Therapy, I help people to reset the alarm systems. And so we can then begin to look at some of the physical aspects of improving their fitness and resolving the pain.
Excellent. So this is backtrack for a moment. Obviously, you said that you worked in the NHS. What was it that made you decide to sort of go across into private practice?
Well, I went from being a physiotherapist in the NHS to becoming a senior manager.
Right.
And I did a few years working as senior manager, looking at service development. But I decided I wanted to get back to working with clients, back to one-to-one work with patients. And an opportunity came up in private practice at that point in time, which is why that's the route that I took.
So were you finding that the further up the ladder you were going, the more removed from clients you were becoming from patients?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
A bit more paperwork.
Yeah, lots of bureaucracy.
I can imagine. So let's talk about BRWT. Sorry, BWRT.
Yeah, Brain Working Recursive Therapy. Yeah.
Explain a bit more about that. What's that? How does that help people?
BWRT is a psychotherapeutic technique which helps people change the response that they have in a particular situation. So many of the responses that we have are automatic. They're on autopilot. And it's a particular neural pathway or neural program that's developed within us that creates that response.
Okay.
And so what BWRT does, it's a technique which helps reroute the neural pathway, create a new neural pathway. So we're creating a new response, a response that's more helpful and that serves us better than the automatic responses that perhaps aren't helping us as well as we'd like them to.
Wow. So is that quite a new science, or is it a
relatively new technique. It's been around for about 3 or 4 years now, but it's really making headway with a lot of therapists using it now. And we're starting to see the amazing changes that it brings.
I can imagine.
And more people are wanting to learn how to do it.
Wow, fascinating. Yeah, because we were talking before the show. Obviously, I had Carol on last week, hypnotherapist, and she was mentioned about BWRT, just to get that right. And I find it fascinating that, you know, just by rewiring the brain almost.
Absolutely.
It deals with so many of the other physical issues that people suffer.
Yeah.
So let's go on to what you're doing. So we've mentioned that you're a hypnotherapist, you've trained as a clinical hypnotherapist, a psychotherapist, and the Pilates instructor. How do those services help people? In what ways do you help people today?
Well, as I say, many of the people that I see have got persistent pain. Mm-hmm. Many of them have been told that they've just got to really try and get on with things, and that there's perhaps nothing else that can be done. But the work that I do helps them create the life that they want to live, really. So we start to explore some of these reasons why their alarm systems might be triggered.
Mm-hmm.
And we begin to explore the new responses that they would prefer to have. So that because their alarm system's at a more settled level, they're not reacting in an adverse way that creates muscle tension, that creates restriction in their joint movement. So when we've finished working, they feel a lot more calm, they feel a lot more confident, they feel that they can move much more freely, they're sleeping better, mm-hmm. And then they begin to be able to explore improved physical fitness as well, which is when the Pilates comes into the work as well. Obviously, in between that, we also do some physical work to release tight muscles and restricted joint movement as well.
Ah, that's very interesting. So for most people, there is a set procedure. There's a set route that you follow. I guess there are people that are outside of those parameters, but generally, so do you deal with the physical side first, then the kind of the mental side, and then introduce exercise in afterwards?
Well, often if you look at a lot of reasons why we have pain, there's a lot of restriction in muscles and how the muscles are moving.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look at why that might be the case, often it's because of our alarm systems being high alert.
Yeah.
So if we discover that that is the case, we start by looking at that, bring the alarm systems back down. We can then allow the muscles to relax. And then you can begin to work on strengthening and loosening and allowing more movement to happen at these. But if you just try to work on relaxing the muscles and getting the muscles moving stronger, when the alarm system's still really elevated, it's going to be a bit difficult to do. So that's the process that I tend to follow. And once the muscles are happy, as I call them, we can then begin to look at more physical strength and more physical activity.
Wow, fascinating. So let's have a chat about some examples. Obviously, important that we don't name people for privacy reasons. But can you give me a couple of examples of real-life clients where they've had particular issues and some of the successes that you've had with those clients?
Okay, so I've seen quite a few patients who've had more than one occasion had surgery for their spine. So I've had clients with neck surgery and low back surgery. So they've had a lot of pain ongoing for many years, probably prior to the surgery. They've had surgery, their pain's perhaps improved to some degree, but certainly hasn't resolved, and it's continued to disrupt their lifestyle. So after the work we've done, we've managed to get them to a point where the pain is very minimal, and they're leading a much more active life. So they've discovered a life that they didn't think they were going to be able to lead again, which is really exciting. I also work with people with trigeminal neuralgia. One particular lady had had it for at least 30 years. She was very aware, actually, that she was a bit of a worrier and a little bit sort of anxious, but she didn't realise how much that was impacting on her pain. And once we started addressing some of those issues, she actually felt that she was a completely different person and wished that she'd done it years ago.
So for people that don't know what that is, trigeminal neuralgia is?
It's an irritation of a nerve around the face and neck.
Okay.
And into the head. So it gives you really intense headaches.
So does it commonly manifest in a particular part of the head, or can it be all over? Can it be particular nerves?
It's a nerve called the trigeminal nerve.
Oh, right,
nerve.
Okay,
it's
see. I'm learning.
It's one particular nerve called the trigeminal nerve.
And is it quite a common problem?
Yes, it is quite, it's very common. Oh. And it's very commonly attributed to just having to deal with the pain. It's one of those pains that say, well, I don't know, there's much more that can be done for it, but you just need to have to deal with the pain. Whereas the approach I take helps to look at the reasons why it might be there in the first place.
So if someone is suffering with that, but they don't know, what would these symptoms be?
Well, the clients would normally have been diagnosed with this kind of problem.
Okay.
Obviously, any kind of headache, any kind of intense head pain would need to be investigated thoroughly before they'd come to see me.
So a doctor or a consultant would have made a diagnosis.
Yes, yeah.
So they come to you knowing what the problem is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I guess up to that point, possibly they just had medication.
Yes.
And we were
talking
about diabetes during the break where, medication, often just papers over the cracks.
Yeah.
But if the walls are falling down, papering over the cracks can only last for so long before the wall crumbles. And it's good that you are a bit like with me and diabetes, you're dealing with the problem.
Yeah,
you're not
absolutely.
Just given a drug to paper over the symptoms and deal with the symptom.
Yeah, and often I find that people are actually living in fear almost of the next flare-up, the next time that pain's going to really, take them out of what they want to be able to do.
So does that fear then cause the flare-up?
Absolutely. Yeah. So then, definitely.
Okay, and what other examples have you got? What other areas of expertise what areas have you helped people with?
Quite a few people who've had disc problems, prolapsed, prolapsed discs. So again, they've probably resolved to some degree from the acute flare when the issue first happened, but the pain continues to interrupt their life. And again, we look at the reasons why that might be, why the pain might be continuing, and help them to feel much more positive and much more confident. And certainly, like I said, one of the things often can be is there's an expectation of the fear, an expectation of the pain, a fear of the pain, which certainly can, in many of these cases, is one of the elements that we deal with.
So taking that fear away.
Absolutely.
And do you find by taking the fear away, often it doesn't stop the problem necessarily, but it certainly mitigates it.
It's
certainly reduces
one of the
frequencies.
Facets. And that's why I say there's many different reasons why pain can start, but there's many other reasons why pain might continue.
Mm.
And those are the things that we look at. And fear of the pain is one of the things, certainly. So, we do a lot of work around that.
And do you find that back problems are quite common these days?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, spinal work is one of my special areas, and it's one of the areas that I really enjoy working with, because there are just so many people who have back pain. Many, many times it can be a simple matter of understanding the dynamics and the biomechanics of the spine and understanding and making sure that you're doing the right thing to be able to prevent the pain.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it can be simple, persistent pain can be just a purely mechanical thing. And I work with people often to be able to address that as well.
Okay.
But it's when they've tried to address those things and the pain's still not going away that we begin to explore the other areas as well.
Wow, very interesting. Yeah, I would guess that back pain is a very common issue these days, and it's a very debilitating condition, and you don't realise how bad back back pain is until you get that twinge, and it is completely debilitating in some cases, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So looking forward to the next sort of 12 months or so, what are your plans for yourself and for your business for the coming year?
I'm in the process of writing a book.
Oh, cool.
Which I'm writing so that I can explain to more people the kind of work I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So for the people who have tried, you know, just a physical approach and their pain's still continuing, then to help them to explore the other things that can improve their situation.
And how's the book coming together?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's great. I'm probably about 75% of the way through.
Wow.
So
getting
there. So hopefully in the next couple of months, we'll be at the point where it's...
So are you going to have a book launch party?
I haven't planned it yet, but I'm sure
you've got to do it.
I'm sure I will. Perhaps I'll be back.
Particularly if you can do it in the next couple of months, you'll have, you know, it'll be June, July, August time. It'll be summertime.
Yeah.
You know, I could imagine a launch party in a beer garden somewhere.
That sounds a good
It sounds like a plan.
Fabulous idea.
Fantastic. So if you're about 75% through, so what, another sort of 3 or 4 months perhaps?
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, to actually see it. I mean, I hope to finish writing
it. No pressure.
Yeah, I hope to finish writing it in the next month.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And you often find that when someone's written a book, it opens the door to them writing a second book and a third book.
Yeah.
I think for most of us, that first book is the hardest one. And then once you understand the process and you've kind of been there and done it,
absolutely,
writing the second and third becomes a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Not easy by any means.
Yeah. And I am enjoying it. It's lovely. I'm really, really enjoying it.
It's quite therapeutic, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
It's also part of, I'm writing the book as we mentioned as well. And it's part of my learning process.
Yeah.
Because you do research and you learn,
absolutely,
during the process as well. So what other plans have you got?
I'm also planning on running an online program where I'm going to be providing Pilates groups and relaxation sessions. So it's really come about because I run Pilates classes and I'm at the point now where my classes are full. I like people to be able to carry on doing the Pilates work that we do when we finish working them on a program. And there's a limit to the capacity that I've got. So I thought if I could run a group online that people could follow at home, once that's up and running, which hopefully will be in the next couple of months, then people may follow that after a program they've worked with me, or it may be even if they're just looking to keep fit and improve their flexibility and their strength, that they could join into the program as well through that route as well.
Wow, big plans. Exciting.
It is very exciting.
Fantastic. Yeah. So obviously we've mentioned what you do and how you got into doing what you do. So looking at your ideal clients, for people listening out there this morning, who are you looking for? What symptoms might they have that they may be able to relate to that will make them go, actually, it's worth a conversation with you?
Well, like I said, most people who have had pain for some time.
Okay.
I mean, I am happy to see anyone that's got pain and give them an opinion, an assessment on what I think about that. But often the people will be coming to see me have been through the whole system of their GP, maybe a consultant at the hospital,
mm-hmm,
maybe, like I said, even surgery, but they're still not at the point where they want to be. And if they really feel that there's more that can be done themselves, then often there is. So it's really about them feeling that there's another avenue to explore.
Yeah.
And that avenue will be with me.
And not just accepting that's how it's going to be.
Absolutely.
I think there's a lot of people that get to a point where they go, well, this is just part of getting older.
Yeah.
And we're all getting older and we all have a few more aches and pains, but with persistent pain, definitely worth a conversation, because if you've got the option or the chance to reduce it or to get rid of it altogether, it's definitely a route to look at, isn't it, and to investigate. Okay, so how does it work with you? So if someone's interested in talking to you, do they chat to you over the phone first? Do you do like an initial consultation?
Yes to both, really.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm more than happy to have a conversation over the telephone. And I do like people to have what I call a discovery session as well.
Yep.
Because we're going to be working together with this kind of client for a good few weeks, probably over 3 or 4 months. And they need to really be sure that what I'm going to be doing is going to be for them.
Yep.
And I need to be sure that they're the kind of client that I can help as well. So the discovery session will allow that to happen.
Okay.
We can explore a little bit around you know, what they'd need and what they'd like to get to.
So the first step in that process is obviously having a chat with you.
Yeah.
So how can people make contact with you? What are your contact details?
Okay. So they can click onto my website, which is www.bodymind-solutions.co.uk.
Yep.
And there's a contact form on there for a discovery session.
Okay.
Or they can give me a call on 07913-266-480.
Fantastic. And they can also find your Facebook page.
Yes, Facebook page as well.
Body Mind Solutions. Search on Facebook. Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show this morning, Sandra. It's been fascinating to find out more about what you do. And I've certainly picked up a few things as well. So just to reiterate, Sandra's website is www.bodymind-solutions.co.uk. And her number is 07913-266-480. Thank you again.
Thank you.
It's been great to have you on this morning.
It's been lovely to be here. Thank you. Bye.
Welcome back to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva, on Monday, the 30th of April. And my special guest this morning, Sandra Lamb from Body Mind Solutions. So we just found out more about what Sandra does and how she can help you. And we'll just cover Sandra's website address and contact details at the end of the show. Quick reminder of the show's Twitter feed, which is at Health Radio Show. If you'd like to drop me a tweet between shows, ask a question, ask for a shout out, please do so. A quick shout out for a good friend of mine, Dee Stringer. Dee is a lymphedema specialist, and Dee was on my show a few shows ago now. And she was also, she volunteered as a massager I'm sure that's not the technical term, but she was helping out at the London Marathon last weekend. So well done, Dee. It'll be good to catch up with you soon. Right, and her business is called Swelling Matters. So we're going to, for a moment, we're going to talk about fat. Now, in previous shows, I have spoken about fat before, because there is this preconception that fat makes people fat, and actually it's not true. It's actually excess carbohydrates, particularly refined carbohydrates, that make people fat. And I'll come on to the biological reasons that happens in a later show, because that is a subject by itself. But really, there is no correlation between the thing we call fat and the fat that we become. And actually, the truth is that we need fat in our diet, but we need the right amount of the right fats. So excess fat, regardless of whether it's good or bad fats, is not particularly healthy. And also certain bad fats are very bad for the body, even in small quantities. So let's go through the good and the in-between and the bad. So fat is important. As I've mentioned, it helps you absorb vitamins and minerals. So vitamins A, vitamins D, vitamins E and vitamins K are fat soluble, which means they need to be taken with fat in the diet to be able to be absorbed into the body. Without those vitamins literally go in one end and come out the other. It also helps to reduce inflammation. It helps muscle movement. It's essential for blood clotting. It helps cell membranes. There's lots and lots of reasons why we need to consume fat in our diet, and don't go down the route of one of these bonkers low fat or zero fat diets, because they can actually be very dangerous to the body. So good fats are monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats. So the key word there is unsaturated. The bad ones are the man-made trans fats and hydrogenated fats, and the saturated fats, which have been vilified, to be fair, for a long, long time. So these are mainly animal-based fats. They've been vilified as being bad, but really they do perform a kind of medium function of being, sometimes they can be bad and sometimes they can be good. And I am going to cover saturated fats in a lot more detail on the next show, because it's interesting, it is useful to know when they're good for you and when they are bad for you. So the difference between the fats on a chemical level is just the way that the hydrogen atoms are connected to the carbon atoms. So I'm not going to go into chemistry at this point, but it really is as simple as a slight change in chemical structure that turns a good fat into a bad fat. So on the subject of bad fats, hydrogenated and trans fats. So this is when they take a good fat. So they take a healthy oil, either an unsaturated or a polyunsaturated fat, and they heat it in the presence of hydrogen and a heavy metal catalyst such as palladium. And when they heat a healthy fat, hydrogen atoms get added to that chemical bond, that chemical chain, and it turns what essentially is a healthy fat into an unhealthy fat. So why do they do that? Well, it makes the fat molecule have a longer shelf life. So it's used in a lot of processed foods. It's used in a lot of pastries and cakes and biscuits. I'm really sorry to break that news to you, but this hydrogenated or trans fat is used in a lot of unhealthy foods and processed foods to give it a longer shelf life. So they take, as I mentioned, they take the healthy fat, they bombard it and heat it with hydrogen, and then they turn it from a healthy fat into a unhealthy fat. And you'll see this on food labels. So if you read your food labels and you see either hydrogenated oil or hydrogenated fat or partially hydrogenated oil or trans fats, then these are the fats that really there is no safe amount that you can consume. These are really, really dangerous to the body. I can't stress this enough. It raises the amount of LDL cholesterol in the blood. So LDL is the bad cholesterol. And also, as a double whammy, it also reduces HDL cholesterol, which is the good cholesterol. So you get a combination of an increase in bad cholesterol and a decrease in good cholesterol. And trans fats can cause things like heart disease and stroke and diabetes. They do contribute to insulin resistance, And we've already mentioned diabetes on the show already, but they can contribute to the development of type 2 diabetes. And it has been estimated that for every 2% of calories that you consume from trans fats daily, it increases the risk of heart disease by 23%. So be under no false illusions. Trans fats and hydrogenated fats are really bad for the body. So the in-between fats, so saturated fats, so these tend to be solid at room temperature. So imagine if you cook a piece of bacon and obviously the fat heats up and it goes to liquid and it drips off into the pan and then it cools, then obviously that congeals. And it's that bacon grease, that's the saturated fat that comes from animal-based products. So red meat predominantly, but also in whole milk and other whole milk dairy foods, so whole milk cheese, and also coconut oil. Whilst that has saturated fat in it, in moderation, coconut oil can be good for you, but I do stress in moderation. And saturated fats are also used in baked goods as well. And the word saturated refers to the number of hydrogen atoms that surround each carbon atom. So they are literally saturated with hydrogen. So it is bad for you in large amounts. It can drive up cholesterol. It can cause heart disease. It can cause cardiovascular issues. So it really is important to keep the consumption of saturated fat to a minimum, anything between 10 and 15 grams a day. But I am going to talk about next week the way that saturated fat can be of benefit to you if you have the right amount. And it's interesting, the interaction with good cholesterol. So we'll talk about saturated fat in more detail next time. So good fats. So these are the unsaturated fats and the polyunsaturated fats. So when people cut out fats, they cut out fats altogether. And really, you need the good fats in your diet because these can help to reduce inflammation. They perform a lot of important functions in the body. And these fats are found in things like vegetables, nuts, seeds, and fish. Obviously, in fish, we get the omega-3s. Olive oils, things like peanut oil, canola oil, avocados are very high in fat, but actually they're very high in good fats. Sunflower oil. So when you look at the Mediterranean diet, they have a diet that's really high in fat, but it's really high in monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats. And those people on the Mediterranean diet, despite having a high fat diet, are actually incredibly healthy. So polyunsaturated fats, things like corn oil, I mentioned sunflower oil, safflower oil, these are essential fats. And what that means is that your body can't make them. So if your body can't make them, you need to get them in your diet because fat helps things like helps you to build cell membranes. It covers the nerve. There's a thing called the myelin sheath. So if you imagine your nerves are like electrical wires with insulation around them, well, that insulation is made of fat. That's called the myelin sheath, and your body makes that from the fat that you consume. You also need fat for blood clotting. You need fat for effective muscle movement and also to reduce inflammation. And polyunsaturated fats have been shown to reduce the harmful levels of LDL cholesterol. It also can reduce triglycerides, and it can increase HDL, which is the good cholesterol. And omega-3 fats, they're found in things like salmon and mackerel, but also in non-fish sources like chia seeds, flax seeds, walnuts, and unhydrogenated soybean oil. So you can find healthy fats not just in fish, but also in some nuts and seeds. And omega-3s can help reduce heart disease risk and also help prevent things like stroke. It can also help people with rheumatoid arthritis. And there is some links between increase in good fats and the reduction of risk of dementia and brain-related conditions. So there's a very quick summary of the reason why fat is not necessarily bad in the diet. You just need to stay away from the trans and the hydrogenated fats. You need to moderate the consumption of saturated fats. And you need to have the right amount of monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats, which are the good fats. Right, it's time to wrap the show up. How quickly an hour goes. So I'd just like to remind you of my website address, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. I do offer a free discovery session. So if you're interested in talking to me for particularly diet related, health related, weight loss related, or diabetes, type 2 diabetes related subjects, then please do give me a shout. Drop me a line on my website and I'll be in contact to help you out. The show's Twitter feed is at Health Radio Show, and on Facebook, Health Matters Radio Show. Drop me a message between shows for a shout out or to ask a question. And as I mentioned, you can pick up previous shows either via the media page on my website or via iTunes and also SoundCloud as well. I'd like to say that if you want to come on the show, as Sandra has done today, it'll be great to have you on the show in June or July. So if you're interested, again, drop me a line and we'll see about getting you on a future show. I'd like to thank Sandra for coming on the show again this morning. It's been great to have you on the show. And would you like to give the listeners just a quick reminder of your website address and your phone number?
Yeah, so my website is www.bodymind-solutions.co.uk
and your phone number?
Phone number is 07913-266-480.
Lovely. Thank you, Sandra. Again, thank you for coming on the show this morning. We are going to wrap up the show now with one more song from 1987. It's called C'est la vie by Robbie Neville. And after the break, we'll have the Channel Radio news and weather. So until next time, stay well, stay healthy, and have a great week.